Imagine moving into your dream neighborhood, only to find that your contentment quickly evaporates as you notice your neighbors' newer cars, bigger TVs, and more lavish vacations. Suddenly, your comfortable home feels inadequate. This psychological shift is at the heart of what John DeGraff, David Wan, and Thomas Naylor diagnose as affluenza, a painful, contagious condition of overload, debt, anxiety, and waste resulting from the dogged pursuit of more. First introduced in their PBS documentary and later expanded into a book, this concept has evolved from an obscure term to a cultural touchstone with millions of references online. At its core, affluenza asks a simple yet profound question. Why are we working ourselves to exhaustion to buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even know? Shopping centers have replaced churches as cultural centers, with 70% of Americans visiting malls weekly. Our homes have doubled since the 1950s, SUVs dominate our roads, and yesterday's luxuries are today's necessities. We now spend more on shoes, jewelry, and watches than higher education. This hunger for more stems from constant comparison, not just with neighbors, but with wealthy colleagues and idealized TV lifestyles. Heavy TV viewers overestimate what average Americans own, while the widening wealth gap makes even six-figure earners feel poor. Economist Stefano Bartolini calls this the example not to follow, a cycle where consumption and work create stress and loneliness, driving even more purchases. The irony? Despite owning twice the material goods as in the 1950s, Americans report no increase in happiness. Have you ever stood in front of a full closet feeling like you have nothing to wear? This paradox reflects a deeper truth. We're drowning in stuff, yet perpetually unsatisfied. Shopping addiction affects millions of Americans, creating a cycle where emotional voids are filled through purchasing. Some compulsive shoppers even report experiencing euphoric states during purchases, comparing them to orgasms. Our addiction operates on diminishing returns. Each purchase brings less satisfaction than the last. Yet the system makes resistance nearly impossible, from mandatory gift-giving seasons to unrepairable appliances. Even when avoiding car ownership, we subsidize car culture through taxes for roads and parking. This stuff-centered existence permeates daily life. Airports become battlegrounds over overhead space, highways fill with oversized vehicles, and tech companies propose autonomous vehicles instead of addressing our cluttered, car-dependent lifestyle. We haven't chosen this consumptive lifestyle, we've been corralled into it through social pressures, attempting to fulfill our needs for identity and belonging through possessions. Busy has become our default response when asked how we're doing. Americans now work 160 hours more annually than in 1969, more than any other industrialized nation. Though two-thirds desire a more relaxed life, the pace only quickens. Economic reality has shifted dramatically since the 1960s, when one income could support a family of four. Today, two incomes barely maintain three people at a median standard. Work intensity has also increased, with computer monitoring driving faster performance demands. The health toll is severe. Stress constricts blood vessels like nicotine, earning its reputation as the new tobacco. Skipping vacations raises heart attack risk by 30% for men and 50% for women. Yet Americans forfeit $67 billion in unused vacation time, with only 38% taking their full allowance. Even on break, 72% stay connected to work. Europeans chose differently, trading productivity gains for leisure. Working 9 weeks less annually than Americans, they maintain 91% of U.S. productivity while enjoying better health outcomes and longer lives. As one activist noted, if you win the rat race, you're still a rat, and possibly a dead one. Children have become prime targets in the affluenza epidemic, with their spending surging from $4 billion in 1984 to $35 billion in 2005. marketing to children grew 15,000% between 1980 and 2004, transforming simple birthday parties into elaborate productions. Today's children recognize logos by 18 months and request brands by age 2, receiving about 70 toys annually. They spend 48 hours weekly exposed to commercial messages, but only 40 minutes in meaningful conversation with parents, often trusting TV characters more than their parents. The 1984 deregulation of children's television changed everything. Advertisers now openly strategize to bypass parents, whom they call gatekeepers, while schools, facing budget constraints, increasingly allow corporate advertising on campus. Education professor Alex Molnar notes how children are treated as cash crops, with corporations providing branded curriculum materials. The impact is troubling. Depression and suicidal thoughts have risen dramatically among children since the 1960s. They're overscheduled in preparation for a consumer-driven world, with some schools eliminating recess for more instruction time. Perhaps most concerning, 93% of teenage girls name shopping as their favorite activity, while fewer than 5% prioritize helping others. Remember when local shopkeepers knew your preferences and neighbors knew each other? This sense of community has eroded as consumer competition intensifies. The suburban dream has devolved into private consumption that isolates neighbors, while community gathering spaces, Ray Oldenburg's Third Places, vanish. When chains replace local businesses, civic leadership diminishes. Though chains offer lower prices, communities lose their cultural identity. Local businesses create a multiplier effect through local hiring and goods, while national chains create a divider effect. Major retailers now dominate markets. Walmart's annual revenue, $469 billion in 2012, rivals Medicare expenditures. As affluenza spreads, Americans retreat behind walls, with 10% living in gated communities and 1 in 5 Americans behind some form of security barrier. Sociologist Edward Blakely questions how we can maintain a social contract without social contact, while Robert Reich notes affluent Americans have essentially seceded from society. Local buying and investing offers an antidote to affluenza. Like acupuncture, the localization movement provides precise, preventive solutions. Despite America's processed food landscape of 100,000 fast food restaurants, businesses like Whole Foods and farmer cooperatives are fostering healthier eating and stronger communities. The cure for our collective illness begins with taking stock. Many Americans are finding ways to live better with less, from choosing tiny homes under 400 square feet to more radical approaches like Bill Power's 12x12 off-grid house. A remarkable 86% of those who voluntarily downshift report greater happiness. Like addiction recovery, fighting affluenza requires community support. Cecile Andrews pioneered this through voluntary simplicity groups, where participants share experiences, exchange advice, and build resource-sharing networks. Our disconnect from nature is particularly concerning. Modern children spend over 50 hours weekly with electronic media, but less than 40 minutes outdoors. A gap illustrated by one biology teacher finding only 1 in 100 students could identify local wildlife. Alternative economic models exist, as demonstrated by Holland, Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. These nations grow more slowly than America while achieving higher quality of life with more leisure time, lower crime, and better health outcomes. The choice is clear: remain trapped in an economy that undermines well-being or embrace a simpler, more fulfilling life. Recovery starts with acknowledging the problem and committing to positive change.